Blog Talk Radio.
By a bent line, by a straight line, by a crooked line. The Crooked Path, a podcast for modern cunning folk with Peter Pannon.
Hello and welcome to The Crooked Path. My name is Peter Patton and tonight we're going to take a look at crafting with stones. If you want to participate in the discussion, give us a phone call on 909-265-9248. But first, the news. Well, for those of you who are listening in the Los Angeles area, just want to remind you that Wendy Rule is performing at the Lonnie Chapman Theatre in North Hollywood on July the 29th. You can go to www.pendragpublishing.com for more details. If you're going to be in Salem, Massachusetts on Saturday, September the 17th, come and join us at Omen Store, where a bunch of your favorite pagan podcasters will be having a meet and greet in the morning. And in the afternoon of the same day, I'll be teaching Invocation and the Ancient Art of Ritual Possession. It's one of my favorite workshops. And you can go to omensalem.com to get more details on all of their events there. And the following weekend, on September 24th and 25th, we're going to be at the West Coast Eisteddfod in Los Angeles, Welsh Festival. And I'll be teaching my Visceral Magic workshop on both days and selling books. You can go to www.laurenrichards.com/schedule-of-events.html to get more details. There's a lot of good things going on, a lot of good vendors. You can get Welsh food, there's Welsh music, storytelling, the works. It's going to be a fun weekend. And on November 4th to the 6th, is going to find me in North Carolina again at Shadow Harvest. And you can find out more about that by going to www.eternalharvestwicca.org. They don't have anything up yet, but they will be posting information on the festival shortly. So that's pretty much it for the news this time. You can always send me an email at peter.padden@pendragpublishing.com if you have any news items you want me to go over for you and share with the world. So tonight we are talking about stone magic, and we're not talking about fancy crystals and gemstones. There's plenty of books you can find on those particular implements of destruction and construction, but we're actually looking at a more old school way of working with minerals, and that's just plain old stones that you dig up out of the ground. Don't have to be fancy at all. Perhaps the most famous type of stone that gets used in witchcraft and other magical arts is the hagstone. Hagstone is a stone that has a natural hole in it, and they can be anything from a small thing that you can stick in your pocket to big enough that you can pass people through the hole. There's a famous hagstone in Ireland in the field of Tara where they would pass people through the hole in the middle in order to give them healing. And hagstones can be found usually associated with water. You find them on the beaches. I found in England, I found many a hagstone on the beaches in Dorset and in Kent. And over here, I've also found some on the beaches, found them in the beaches in Southern California, running along between Los Angeles and Ventura, along the PCH, Pacific Coast Highway, for those who don't live here. And they are very useful as healing stones and protective talismans. Hagstone, they obviously tied into the Dark Mother, and they really do make good amulets of protection and healing. Another famous stone is the Druid Egg, which is, as the name suggests, an egg-shaped stone. that usually has some sort of interesting or unusual markings, and they're said to be created during the coitus of snakes, adders in particular, or vipers as they're also known. When they get their thing on, they kind of have a huge mass snaky orgy and slither and slithe and writhe and wriggle all over each other, and it can get pretty messy and sticky. And traditionally, the druid eggs are formed in the middle of that sticky mass of copulating snakes. In reality, they're just egg-shaped snakes with interesting markings, but they can be used in very interesting ways. And another way you can work with stones I want to talk about tonight is something that is talked about in a very interesting book I picked up a couple of years ago. It's called Old Tradition Craft. It's by Robin Artisan, not the Robin Artisan who writes books for Pendrague. It's Artisan spelt as in a craftsman, A-R-T-I-S-A-N. And the book is published by Ars Obscura Press. As I said before, its name is Old Tradition Craft, with an E on the end of craft. It's not cheap, it's $60, but it is a very interesting and fascinating book. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the stuff it has about working with stones. Technically, we're talking about undressed stones. It's plain old pebbles, basically, that you dig up out of the ground. It recommends using stones that are rounded and between 2 and 4 inches in diameter around and between 1 and 2 inches thick, so sort of flattened oval pebble type things. How you choose them? Well, first of all, to be practical, they need to be you need to be able to mark them. So when you go looking for them, you should carry a scriber or something similar, and you should be able to mark them by scratching with your metal tool on the surface. And to work with them using the techniques that are in the book, you basically have three tools: a scriber, and a V-cut chisel, and an angle chisel, and a little hammer to drive them along as well. You're basically going to be engraving the stones in much the same way they used to engrave the lettering on tombstones. So, it's a nice connection with the past there as well. The book describes making the tools ritually, but I'm not really trying to talk about following the book exactly. I'm talking about using it as a basis for talking about using stones generally. And if you want to use the tools, you can actually just buy some regular small chisels that are suitable for stonework and consecrate them for your use. Or you can buy the book and learn how to make the tools from scratch, which involves a forge and stuff. But most people don't have access to that in the modern day and age. You select your stones from the forest or the wilderness, basically somewhere out and about in the countryside. You don't want to be picking them out of a bag of rubble at the local Home Depot or something like that. You want to try and find ones that want to work with you. Pick them up. If you see something that looks interesting, pick it up, have a feel, see if it feels right. It's a very intuitive thing. And basically what you do is you cut a symbol representing the purpose of the stone on the top and a sigil representing you on the bottom. And you can use various ways for creating the sigils. I personally like to use the Austin Spare sigil system because I've worked with it a lot and I like it. It's easy and it's fun and effective too. You consecrate the stone with the elements or erts, whichever you work with, whether it's the classical elements of their fire and water or the more prosaic sort of physical elements of earth, air, fire and water, but not in the classical sense. Literally burny stuff that you get in a bonfire or a candle for fire, and the wind that blows for air, and the wet stuff for water. You know, actually the physical elements, all the qualities of light, which are known as erts in many Celtic countries. Whichever you work with, you basically want to consecrate the stone to the directions and to the conditions that you work with there. And you want to meditate on it and with it. And then when you're ready, you slap it to the ground and cover it with dirt. And you leave it buried until the next full moon. At which point you dig it up again. And you keep each stone in its own pouch, which is all very nice. And when you want to work with the stones, you create ritual space whilst holding the stone that you're going to be working with, and you call on the essence of the stone, invoke it if you like, and tap the stone 3 times. You can work with 2 stones for a sort of combination thing. We'll talk about that a little bit more later, in which case you would have one in each hand and you'd tap them together. Now, the standard stones that are mentioned in Old Tradition Craft, and I'm sure you can think of others to add to this list, the most important one is the Green Man Stone, where you carve a likeness of the Green Man, a sort of face on it, and that should be carried with you at all times. It's your power stone, if you like. Then there is a Sun Stone that is kept on your altar during the hours of daylight, and it protects against harmful influences during the day, and that would have an image of the sun on the top and your own personal symbol on the bottom. Likewise, the Moonstone, which you keep on your altar with an image of the moon on it, it protects against harmful influences during the night. There's a surprise. And there are stones that you do for each of the phases of the moon. You put an appropriate image for each one, and they're used to sort of define time. You know, if you're doing a healing, you want it to be person to be healed by the next full moon, then you would use the healing stone and the full moon stone. You see how it goes. You're kind of building a little magical sentence there. And also stones for the seasons, which are used in the same way. And you use symbols that mean that are meaningful and represent the symbol, the seasons rather, for you. Then there is a calling stone. Calling stone is almost like a type of stone rather than one specific stone. It's used to call forth a person. It can be generic, just a human, or it can be male or female. Or you can be very specific with a sigil for a particular person to summon them to you. Then there is the headstone, which is used to call your familiar spirit. Obviously, you need to be working with a familiar spirit to get that. That can be either a guardian, guide, patron deity, ancestor that you have a particular affinity with, and stuff like that. A toadstone, which is an amuletic stone, a talismanic stone, which guards against spells worked against you. So if you feel like somebody is doing the nasty on you, toadstone is the one you want to carry around with you. Hagstone guards against nightmares, so that's always handy to have. Then a stone that Robin Arson calls the Maystone, or you could call it the Beltane Stone. And it's for fertility or for banishing barrenness. It's a helping you get kids stone. Then there's the Love Stone, which attracts love. A knot stone, which guards against bad thoughts and curses from your enemies. A keel stone, as in the keel of a boat, which protects against bad spirits. A binding stone, which can bind things, energy, or people to you. Be careful how you use that one. And the maid and lad stones are a pair of stones that you use to call people to you who you can learn from. So they're kind of teacher stones or magister and mistress stones, I guess. But maid and lad stones are the old names for them. A ring stone, which you would obviously engrave a symbol of a ring on there, protects against poverty. And that, by the way, should be worked through all the phases of the moon to be truly effective. Marred stone, which guards your secrets, and the old name marred, you basically want to have a symbol that represents secrets to you. The Leered Stone, which is used to learn other people's secrets. Once again, use a symbol that makes sense, like, you know, spy versus spy or something a bit more esoteric, perhaps. Sleep Stone invokes sleep on the person you set it on. Ghost Stone, used to summon a spirit. A Dream Stone, to call prophetic dreams. A Healing Stone, used for healing, surprise, surprise, and you can make them for specific illnesses as well as a generic healing stone. You can do a cancer stone, you can do a heart congestion stone, you can do a flu stone, you can do all kinds of healing stones. You can have a plethora of healing stones. And a truth stone, used to make a person reveal their true self. I can think of some really evil uses for that, and I'm sure you can too. So these symbols should be ones that you will devise for yourself, or if you prefer, you can get hold of Old Tradition Craft and use the symbols. He has symbols for each of those included in the book, As I said before, it's published by Ars Obscura Press and can be purchased from them for 60 smackaroos. And if you go to www.arsobscurabookbinding.com/titles_for_sale.html, you'll find that amongst several other interesting tomes, Old Tradition Craft is sitting there. And there's a couple of different editions, actually. You can get the cheaper edition that I've got or a fancy one if you want to spend even more money. And it's got a lot of other interesting things in as well, but that section in particular has fascinated me, and I think it's a very effective and somewhat complete magical system, very practical, and I like that.
Praxis.
Now, one of the practical aspects of working with stones that I wanted to share with you is something that has been very effective for me and my friends, and that is actually talking to the spirit of the stone. And it's a really good way of figuring out which stone is best for which purpose, and also very useful for establishing a connection with the spirit of the stone, the energy of the stone, so that it's easier to call on. And, you know, it's a little bit of a weird practical technique, but it is surprisingly effective, and I heartily recommend it. It works with crystals and gemstones and the fancy stuff as well, but it particularly works well with rocks that you find lying around in the countryside. And it's a very simple operation. You do have to kind of allow yourself to go there a little bit. First of all, you want to find somewhere quiet and peaceful, and with the stone in your hand, you want to sit down, maybe with your back against a tree or against a wall or against a chair, obviously, and you just want to get into a meditative trance state through using whatever technique works best for you. And then you're going to really start to focus on the stone. You're going to hold it in your hand, and you're going to turn it around, look at it from different angles. You want to really get to know the physical features of that stone, so that you're very, very familiar with the way it looks from all angles. Because what you're basically going to do is you want to get to the point where you can close your eyes and visualize the stone with clarity. And when you get to that point, you let your hand go down and rest on your lap, still holding the stone, but then you visualize the stone, but you visualize it really huge, like the size of a house or a building of some sort, and you walk around it looking at all the details, the surface texture. And as you walk around, you will eventually find a point where there appears to be a way into the stone. It'll either be a sort of cave-like opening, or maybe even a doorway that's quite formal, depending on the nature of the stone itself. And you're going to go inside, and basically you're entering into the mineral crystal matrix of the rock. And one of the things about minerals is they tend to have very regular molecular structures. And so what you end up with is finding yourself in a series of rooms that may or may not be regular shaped, or they may be a little strange and twisty. But there will be rooms and connecting corridors in there, and let your intuition guide you as you move into the heart of the stone. And eventually you're going to find yourself coming face to face with somebody else in there. And this is the spirit of the stone, the genius of the stone, if you like. And depending on where you got the stone from and what type of stone it is and the general inclination of that specific example of that type of stone, you may or may not find the entity being particularly friendly or encouraging. So be very polite and take your time to introduce yourself and explain why you're there, and ask if the stone would be willing to help you. And if the dude in the stone says no, then thank them for their time and about face and walk out and move on to the next stone. You really don't want to try forcing or cajoling spirits of any kind. in this sort of work. You really want to find ones that are actually already willing to work with you. And what, you know, assuming the stone person says yes, you can then talk about what kind of work the stone should be used for, whether the stone has a particular preference for healing or for secrets or for poverty dispelling or any of those other things. And, you know, because obviously it's always easier to use a tool by working with its natural inclinations than to try and force it to do things that are contrary to its nature. So if the stone is got a very positive vibe for doing healing, then use it as a healing stone. And you should do this several times with the stone. Establish a rapport, and finally, the last time you do it, you should do it as part of the ritual to consecrate it and set it up before you put it in its pouch and start to use it on a regular basis. And the final part of that bit is the slapping it down and burying it until the next full moon. This is, as I've talked about before on previous podcasts, the idea of the sonic shock or the ritual shock that fixes the energy in the matrix of the stone so that it resonates to that energy. And that's basically what you're doing. And then you place it under the earth to allow it to soak up energy from the earth. Now, this doesn't mean you have to be out in the wilderness and bury it in a hole and remember where you left it. You can do this in your temple or in your bedroom or in your kitchen. Have a pot of dirt and put it in there. It's probably nicer if you do it outside, but it still works if you do it inside in a bowl. So for those of you with apartments who don't have a backyard, that is obviously a better option. And you can then, you know, bury several stones at the same time or in the same bowl at different times. Just remember when each one is due to come out. So it's not not a difficult or tedious process. You just have to remember to pull them out at the next full moon. And then once you've got that going, you should continue to have your communications with the spirit of the stone. Maintain a cordial relationship with it, because if he's happy with you or she's happy with you and you're happy with them, the whole thing's going to work a lot better. You'll find the stones become very potent and very powerful in that way. And it will... You'll actually be surprised at just how effective they can be. So that is my recommendation. Whether you use the symbols in and the details in the book, or whether you just use it with general principles as I've laid them out in this broadcast, you can really get quite an exciting thing going with the stones. And, of course, you can be buying a lot of little pouches, because you'll always think of something else you can create a stone for working with. As I said, this is not a comprehensive list I've given by any means. It's just the traditional ones that are in the book. And you can come up with lots of other ones. And you could combine this with using specific minerals. I mean, if you have something like this other book I've got that's actually published also by Ars Obscura, The Virtue of Stones. It's one of the oldest books on stone magic that exists. It was originally written in Latin, and this book has the original Latin and English translation, and it was translated by Patricia P. Tuhill and edited by Joel Radcliffe, and you can get it from the same website that I already mentioned. And it talks about a lot of different stones, some of which we don't know what they are. Modern meaning doesn't always work, and sometimes the names sound familiar but they actually mean something different, because apparently when they spoke about sapphire in the old world, they probably were talking about lapis lazuli, and so it can be a little difficult. You have to kind of use some intuition even with these. But what you'll get with the book, and I'm just flipping through here, The Well-Informed Damigeron's Book on Gemstones to the Emperor Tiberius. And it's basically has a bunch of stones, and it tells you what they're used for. It's Aetites, a stone that is nature's greatest protector. God gave this first stone for the protection of man and for the sake of his health. And yeah, it talks about some of the mythology of the stone. And it describes it, a purplish red stone, very rough in appearance, that has another stone within it, as if pregnant. It's useful to pregnant women for that reason. If tied around the left arm, it does not allow the woman to abort. It's also very useful for a speedy delivery. And all sorts of other bits and pieces. There's a little passage on each of the stones. Coral, diamond, emerald, hematite. And some that I've never heard of before, because it even says in the notes at the back that some of these, nobody knows what the stone is that they're actually referring to. So, but there are a lot of books like this. There's Love is in the Earth, which is a very popular modern one, which has the physical properties, the geology of the different minerals, and it has a lot of the magical uses and healing uses as well of the crystals. And that's probably one of the most beloved of crystal workers. There's a big book, lots of information, very tiny print, but it's really good for that. And you can find a lot of traditional books that have lists of various minerals and what they can be used for magically. So I'm not going to try and specify, because it varies from tradition to tradition. You can use the stones for the signs of the zodiac. You can work exclusively with quartz crystals, as I did for a while, a clear quartz, smoky quartz, rose quartz, amethyst. Amethyst is one of my favorite stones for working with. It's reputed to purify poison out of drinks, and it used to be in medieval times that kings would have amethyst set in their goblet, or they would actually drop amethyst into their drinks so that if anyone tried to poison them, they wouldn't get done. And a very practical modern use for amethyst is if you have when you go into rock shops, they have the chunks of amethyst that are it's like a section of a geode where it's sort of sitting on the sort of granite type rock and all the crystals on one side. It's like the inside of a coconut, but purple and glittery. They're really good for issues of blood, for blood problems, and specifically one of those chunks of amethyst, you place it over your solar plexus if you're having menstrual cramps, and it helps soothe them, which is really cool. But all ailments of the blood can be helped by amethyst, and amethyst is generally a purifying and healing stone that can be used for a lot of things. Quartz crystal, of course, you can use the sonic shock technique and the talking to the spirit of technique that we've gone over, and program it to be just about anything. It's a very versatile stone. There are people who work exclusively with quartz crystals for that reason. It saves you spending a lot of money on very rare stones, which is always a good thing. And that's about it. We can do these podcasts, these broadcasts, for up to an hour, but they don't have to be the full hour. And right now I'm basically done. This is a fairly short one. It's our first live one, so I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope that you will come again next week when we'll be doing something else wild and exciting, and I hope that we will get some callers next time, and that will be very cool. So until then, have a good evening, and thank you for listening.
By a bent line, by a straight line, by a crooked line. The Crooked Path, a podcast for modern cunning folk with Peter Pannon.
How was it?